Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Jill Robbins, Anna Mateo, and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Jill Robbins.
This week, the International Space University, based in Strasbourg, France, ended its first virtual Interactive Space Program, or ISP. The ISP is an online development program for scientists in different fields of expertise. It trains them to work together in groups using space resources to prepare for space flight and related projects. The ISP is structured to be like a real space mission. About a month before the 5-week program began, the groups received training on team dynamics and communication skills. They also learned how to use digital tools for sharing documents, team building, and social exchanges. 86 men and women, representing 30 different nationalities, took part in the latest interactive space program called ISP 2020. The participants learned about all areas of study linked to space exploration. Like members of an actual spaceflight crew, they worked closely with space experts during the program. The director of the ISP 2020, Guktuğ Karacaloğlu, spoke with VOA about the participants.
So ISU in general, not particularly this program, operates on a more almost intergenerational setting. So we have participants starting from new graduates at the age of 20, 21, and we have participants even in this program at the age of 60 plus who are senior managers in their institutions or organizations. And generally the average age is around 35. I can definitely say the network that we have at ISU, especially through our alumni, and we have alumni around 110 countries at the moment represented. That network is actually one of the driving factors for the people to ISU programs.
This year, 12 of the participants came from India, which has a growing space program. 4 of the 12 were awarded a scholarship honoring the Indian-American astronaut Kalpana Chawla. She was the first Indian-born woman in space. She was one of the 7 astronauts killed when the U.S. space shuttle Columbia broke up when re-entering Earth's atmosphere on February 1, 2003. Just like real astronauts, the participants were asked to complete a simulated space mission. Karacaloğlu explains.
The topic of this year, this particular program, is how space, space technologies, space assets in general, can help the current and the next future pandemics to solve the situation.
On many days, the program began with a talk by an expert from a space agency official or representative. Alumni of the program talked to the participants at other times. One of its most famous alumni is American Jessica Meir. She spoke with the participants this summer about her work with NASA, the U.S. space agency. Meir was part of the first all-female spacewalk in history. The interactive training also involved practical aspects of space and health crises, including pandemics. The participants were given a chance to use satellite and communications technology. Other areas of study were artificial intelligence and medical fields. speakers talked about business, international cooperation, and other issues. These talks were followed by individual and teamwork activities. ISP participants worked in teams with members in different time zones. They studied space and health issues related to pandemics. Karjalioglu said the teams closely examined four areas.
One is how to monitor pandemics from space. The second one is how to mitigate for a future event, how to prevent and how to be prepared. So actually we have these four different teams, each team actually going much more into depth in each of these areas.
As part of the ISP 2020 experience, the participants were required to perform activities not directly related to space exploration. They had to grow food, cook something, get physical exercise, such as walking a certain distance, and plant a tree. Working with speakers of other languages made them communicate better in English. Working across time zones made them understand how astronauts feel as they circle the planet during a typical workday. At the end of the program, each team produced a report and made a presentation on how space can help fight pandemics. The university says the presentations were given to representatives of the World Health Organization and decision makers from around the world. I'm Jill Robbins.
There is a new divisive issue in the U.S. presidential election, the ballot drop box. The issue has taken on new urgency following cost-cutting measures at the U.S. Postal Service. The measures have slowed mail delivery nationwide. U.S. election officials are preparing for a major expansion of mail-in voting. Experts say up to half of voters in the November 3rd election may choose not to vote in person. Democrats across the country are promoting drop boxes as an easy and reliable choice for voters who do not want to entrust their ballots to the U.S. Postal Service. In Connecticut, Secretary of State Denise Merrill is recommending that voters turn in their ballots by Dropbox rather than through the mail. She made the recommendation after receiving reports that some ballots mailed a week before her state's August 11th nominating contests arrived too late to be counted. Three-quarters of ballots in that August primary were cast absentee, she said. Merrill, a Democrat, said the state's 200 new drop boxes had proven a safe and popular choice. Republicans in Pennsylvania do not share that opinion. Bruce Marks is a former Republican state senator from Pennsylvania. He said drop boxes do not offer trust that the person turning in a ballot is the person who cast that vote. There's no one watching or tracking, he said. Pennsylvania's Democratic Governor Tom Wolf has defended the state's use of drop boxes. He argues they are legal and necessary, especially during the coronavirus crisis. President Donald Trump, a Republican, won the state of Pennsylvania by less than 1 percentage point in 2016. Public opinion studies show that he is running behind Democratic candidate Joe Biden in the presidential race. Trump's re-election campaign has taken legal action to prevent the use of ballot drop boxes in Pennsylvania. The campaign says the boxes could lead to voting fraud. Republican officials in other states have already prevented the use of drop boxes. In neighboring Ohio, Republican Secretary of State Frank LaRose said last week that he did not want to risk similar legal action from the Trump administration. He announced he would permit one Dropbox for each of the state's 88 counties. He said the Republican-controlled legislature had not given him the power to provide more. Democrats are urging LaRose to change his decision. They note that the decision leaves the 864,000 registered voters in Cleveland's Cuyahoga County with the same number of drop boxes as the 8,400 registered voters in Vinton County. Cuyahoga County voters are majority Democrat. Vinton is a majority Republican county. In hotly contested Florida, Democrats in Miami-Dade County are seeking to make it easier for voters to use drop boxes. Unlike other counties in the state, Miami-Dade voters must provide election officials with identification when putting a ballot in a drop box. Election workers also record a number printed on the voter's envelope. The process can take up to 3 minutes, the Democratic Party said in a letter to local election officials. The party is seeking to permit voters to drop their ballots quickly without the processing requirements. Security measures required for ballot drop boxes differ from state to state. In Montana, at least 2 election officials must be present at the boxes. In New Mexico, the boxes are watched by video. Some say the drop box battle is unnecessary. Before 2020, 8 states, Arizona, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Montana, New Mexico, Oregon, and Washington, had laws explaining how and where drop boxes could be used. Returning ballots this way proved popular. In Colorado, Oregon, and Washington, more than half of mail ballots were returned either to a drop box or to an election office in the 2016 presidential election. Those numbers come from a Massachusetts Institute of Technology study.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. When the sun shines brightly, it provides a great chance to get outdoor things done, like making hay. At least, that is what farmers from the past would say. Make hay while the sun shines.
This idiom is very old, dating back to medieval times. Rain would often ruin the process of making hay. So farmers had no choice but to make hay when the sun was shining.
Today, we all use this expression, not just farmers. When conditions are perfect to get something done, we can say, it's a good idea to make hay while the sun shines. In other words, you are taking advantage of a good situation or of good conditions. You are making the most of your opportunities. These all mean making hay while the sun shines. Now listen while I use this expression with my friend Brian.
Say, when is your husband coming home?
Not for another 2 weeks.
That's a long time. How are you spending your time alone?
I am finally getting some home improvement projects done. You know, moving some furniture, painting some rooms, cleaning closets.
That's a lot of work for one person. Why don't you wait for your husband to come home?
No way. It's easier to do it by myself. I'm getting everything done that I can't do with other people around.
Good idea. Make hay while the sun shines.
Exactly.
And sometimes we use this expression to mean we beat someone to the punch, or we got ahead of someone else. And other times you make hay while the sun shines to make good use of the chance to do something while it lasts. You are being opportunistic, taking advantage of a good opportunity.
For example, my friend Ozzy was sick for a week and could not go to work. So his coworker, Sarah, who doesn't like him, took advantage of his illness and stole his project. Talk about making hay while the sun shines.
Sometimes when you make hay while the sun shines, you are staying ahead of a problem, like in this example.
Hey, do you want to go hiking with me and my friends this weekend? The weather is going to be beautiful.
I wish I could, but I have to finish my taxes. It's the last weekend before they're due.
Oh, that's too bad.
Wait, what about your taxes?
My taxes are done. I was off from work a couple of weeks ago and made hay while the sun shined. I got all of it done.
I wish I would have taken advantage of my time off last week. All I did was lay around the house.
You should know that sometimes we only use parts of this expression. You might hear someone simply say they were making a little hay. The meaning is still there, even if all the words aren't.
And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. But join us again next week. You can listen while you're making dinner or riding to work.
Yeah, make hay while the sun shines. Learn more English expressions with VOA Learning English. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Brian Lynn.
That makes me stronger. This change is so divine. I'm gonna make hay while the sun still shines. You can't clip my wings. I'm still going.
From VOA Learning English, this is The Making of a Nation, American History in Special English. I'm Steve Ember. This week in our series, we complete the story of the American Revolution. The time is December 1776. British General William Howe has decided to stop fighting during the cold winter months. The general is in New York. He has already established control of a few areas near the city, including Trenton and Princeton in New Jersey. General George Washington and the Continental Army are on the other side of the Delaware River. The Americans are cold and hungry. They have few weapons. Washington knows that if Howe attacks, the British will be able to go all the way to Philadelphia.
He's looking at his army, which is melting away.
Historian Gordon Wood says that moment was the low point of the war for George Washington.
And he decides to make one great effort on Christmas night and crosses the Delaware, dead of winter, cold, ice, and he crosses and attacks Trenton, where you have about 1,000 Hessians who are kind of overwhelmed and defeated. It's a small tactical victory, but a great psychological effect, because it's the first time that Washington had actually done something positive, and it really does, I think, change the psychology of the war.
Another result of the victory at Trenton was that more men decided to join the army. It now had 10,000 soldiers. This new Continental Army, however, lost battles during the summer to General Howe's forces near the Chesapeake Bay. And in August 1777, General Howe captured Philadelphia. Following these losses, Washington led the army to the nearby area of Pennsylvania called Valley Forge.
Valley Forge was the camp where George Washington and his army spent a really miserable, miserable winter.
Alice Camps is a curator at the National Archives in Washington, where some of the country's most important documents are kept. One of those documents is a letter that George Washington wrote from Valley Forge.
And the men had nothing to wear. They had no blankets. They had very little to eat. Illnesses were rampant. It was a very, very miserable experience for them.
But in the middle of that winter, Washington finds out that France has decided to sign a treaty with the colonists.
News. This is the kind of news that would make anyone just run about screaming with joy and doing handstands. But Washington is so reserved, and he says that he's received this news with, quote, the most sensible pleasure, unquote.
He also says he is going to wait for the government to approve the treaty before he tells the army.
The fact that he is not going to announce this news immediately to his army speaks to the fact that he was always, always concerned with doing the right thing and with protocol.
By the spring of 1778, General Washington and his army were ready to fight again. General Howe was still in Philadelphia. His behavior as a military leader was sometimes difficult to understand. At times, he was a good commander and a brave soldier. At other times, he stayed in the safety of cities instead of leading his men in battle. The next series of important battles in the American Revolution was led by another British general, John Burgoyne. His plan was to capture the Hudson River Valley in New York State and separate New England from the other colonies. Doing this, the British believed, would make it easier to capture the other colonies. The plan did not succeed. American General Benedict Arnold defeated the British troops in New York. General Burgoyne had expected help from General Howe, but that help never came. Burgoyne was forced to surrender at the town of Saratoga. The American victory at Saratoga was extremely important. It ended the British plan to separate New England from the other colonies. It also showed European nations that the Americans might be able to win their revolution. This was something that France especially had wanted ever since being defeated earlier by the British in the French and Indian War. The French government had been supplying the Americans secretly through the work of America's minister to France, Benjamin Franklin. Franklin was popular with the French people and with French government officials. He helped gain French sympathy for the American cause. After the American victory at Saratoga, the French decided to enter the war on the American side. The two nations signed military and political treaties. Historian Gordon Wood says this alliance created bigger problems for the British.
Because once the French were involved, it turns the thing from counterinsurgency for the British. They're now fighting a world war.
The British immediately sent a message to America's Continental Congress. they offered to go back to a time of better relations. The Americans rejected the British offer. The war would be fought to the end. In 1779, Spain entered the war against the British. And the next year, the British were also fighting the Dutch to stop their trade with America. The French now sent gunpowder, soldiers, officers, and ships to the Americans. However, neither the Americans nor the British made much progress in the war for the next 2 years. By 1780, the British had moved their military forces to the American South. They quickly gained control of South Carolina and Georgia. But the Americans prevented them from taking control of North Carolina. After that, the British commander moved his troops to Yorktown, Virginia. The commander's name was Lord Charles Cornwallis. Both he and George Washington had about 8,000 troops when they met near Yorktown. Cornwallis was expecting more troops to arrive on British ships. What he did not know was that French ships were on their way to Yorktown, too. Their commander was Admiral François Comte de Grasse. De Grasse met some of the British ships that Cornwallis was expecting and defeated them. The French ships then moved into the Chesapeake Bay near Yorktown. The Americans and the French began attacking the British with cannons. Then they fought the British soldiers hand to hand. Cornwallis knew he had no chance to win without more troops. He surrendered to George Washington on October 17, 1781. The war was over. American and French forces had captured or killed half of the British troops in America. The surviving troops left Yorktown playing a popular British song called "The World Turned Upside Down." How were the Americans able to defeat the most powerful nation in the world? Historians give several reasons. The Americans were fighting at home, while the British had to bring troops and supplies from across the ocean. British officers made mistakes, especially General William Howe. His slowness to take action at the start of the war made it possible for the Americans to survive two difficult winters. Historian Gordon Wood at Brown University in Rhode Island says the British also thought more colonists would support them.
When Burgoyne comes down the Hudson Valley, he starts out with an army of 10,000 or so, and he has to hack his way through the woods, and he keeps losing troops to small militia. He counted on more loyalist support than there was, and I think the British miscalculated terribly on that point.
Another reason the Americans won was the help they received from the French. Also, the British public had stopped supporting the long and costly war. Finally, America might not have won without the leadership of George Washington. He never gave up hope.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.